As winter melts into spring in our state, many Wisconsinites begin their preparation for an annual harvest.
Lighting the fire for the first time is always the best because you've been itching since last season to start making maple syrup again.
Derek Fournier started making maple syrup in 2005 at his home away from home in Mountain, Wisconsin.
We're at Bear Paw Scout Camp. It's located in the Nicolet National Forest. I was lucky enough to be a member of the summer camp staff at this camp. And I noticed over the years that we had a number of sugar maple trees on the property, so I thought it'd be fun for just myself to just try making some maple syrup. It started with 15 taps, a pot, and a cooker underneath. Burned a lot of propane and just got interested in making more than that. Doubled it the next year, tap more trees. And then you catch the maple bug and you want to make more.
9 years later, with the help of Camp Ranger Andy Anderson and many volunteers, Bear Paw Scout Camp now taps over 800 trees, which boils down to roughly 200 gallons of syrup on a good year. A decent production for a small sugar bush. But selling their syrup and turning a profit isn't necessarily their goal.
Just seemed fitting to make a scouting program to teach other kids how to make maple syrup. Boy Scouts have merit badges, and we have a program we run. It's very similar to the requirements to earn a merit badge.
My name is Jason Brevchinsky. I am the program director for Bear Paw Scout Camp's Maple Days. We run a program the last 2 weekends in March and the first weekend in April. The boys come up, they learn everything you need to know to make their own maple syrup from A to Z. We have 8 stations throughout the day where they just have fun.
The scouts begin their day in the dining hall. After sampling some syrup on their pancake breakfast, they head off to their daily activities.
Well, there we got a section on history. Then we have a section where they actually see a sugar shack with an evaporator room and a bottling process.
The front pan, the purpose is converting it to syrup.
We have a couple game stations, one where they're flipping the pancakes over their back and trying to catch them.
Keep your eye on the pancake at all times.
We have a cooking station where they learn how to use maple syrup in recipes.
All good brown sugar will plop it into that melted butter.
We have another one with brace and bit, which teaches them how to tap a tree. We show them how to collect it with buckets.
Connor Scott of Troop 741 came up from Hartford, Wisconsin to participate in Maple Days.
I like the fact that we all get to have our own bottle of maple syrup that we get to take home, and just being able to learn all about it and seeing that we can make it at home too.
And on the back of every bottle is printed the program's true purpose.
Bear Paw Maple Syrup, making Boy Scouting sweeter, one bottle at a time.
That was a Wisconsin Life piece about maple sugaring, perfect for this first day of spring when at least parts of the state are getting some slightly more warm weather and maybe the sap will be running. And I have to say, having pure maple syrup is certainly a real treat. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in this week for Larry Mueller. Larry is in Hawaii, or actually probably on his way back at this point, with a bunch of WPR listeners. It looks like they had a great time. You can see pictures of that trip by going to WPR.org and then going to the show page. Coming up a little later today, we will be talking with Rick Sini of FareCompare.com. Rick has great advice always for travel and especially for buying airline tickets. Today, he's going to be telling us what the zone of indecision is and how we can use it to our advantage. The zone of indecision is when you buy a ticket not too early, not too late, just right, and get the best price possible. We are still trying to get Megan McCreary on the line to talk about pick your yoga practice. In the meantime, if you practice yoga, we'd love to hear from you. What keeps you going back to the mat? What have you gotten out of it? Do you see physical, emotional, mental benefits to your yoga practice? You can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And it looks like we do have Megan on the line now. So as soon as we can get her on, we will start the conversation. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. And again, join in at 1-800-642-1234. And we will be talking with Megan in just a moment. Megan McCreary, thanks for joining us.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
Hi. And just to remind people, you are a yoga teacher and you wrote the new book, Pick Your Yoga Practice, Exploring and Understanding Different Types of Yoga. Let's start out, Megan, by talking about what the benefits are of practicing yoga.
Well, there's many, many benefits for practicing yoga, from the physical to the emotional to the intellectual. But most people start off yoga looking for some physical benefit, whether it's to gain strength and balance, some flexibility, coordination, even relief from stress. Because yoga is very breath-centered, so there's a lot of effects on the nervous system. So we can counter the effects of stress and the emotional hormones of stress. Yoga is just great. And as we age, the flexibility, the range of motion, all of that, yoga is a very holistic approach. It's really great.
We talk once a month with physical therapists on the show, and they were on Monday. I asked them about yoga since we were going to be talking with you today. And physical therapist Lori Tyne Brody, who's one of our regulars, said on Monday, quote, "I often recommend yoga to my patients. It's good for core strength. It's good for mobility. It's good for stability. It's good for relaxation and learning about breathing techniques. It's good for a lot of different issues that people might have, so we make recommendations for that often."
Oh, well, I love that. And, you know, in L.A., I work closely with physical therapists. We often share clients, and it works. We work well together.
And would you say that yoga is accessible to anyone?
I do. I would say yoga is accessible to anybody, but yoga has become so popular so quickly that there's so many classes out there. So I wouldn't suggest just anyone walk into any class.
Mm-hmm. Because there are different levels, and as we will talk about, there are different styles, and some might really suit one person much better, and a different style would suit a different person. The other physical therapist who was on Monday, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, emphasized that a good yoga teacher will always include and suggest modifications for different poses as well.
Yes. I love props. I love giving modifications. There are certain styles that don't believe in modifications or the use of props. And oftentimes I will suggest, whether or not you have been an athlete your entire life or you're just new to sports, take beginners or basic yoga classes at whatever studio is around. Because in the beginners or basics class, you will definitely learn how to modify the poses, how to use the props, how to work within your range of motion so that you can increase it. So I do think that a good yoga teacher is going to be able to help someone feel more comfortable in the pose according to their body.
And you mentioned props. That this might be a good time to just talk about. What are those basic props in yoga?
Oh, well, we blocks are our number one props, and I often call them rectangles of hope. But they're not only just used to, let's say, in a pose, if you can't reach the floor, you use the block. Mm-hmm. We often use blocks just as ways of engaging or ways of showing specific actions. So blocks aren't just, like, I dislike when people think of props as handicaps. Like, props are so beneficial in all areas of our practice. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're a beginner or you're less of a yogi. I've been practicing for 10 years. I still use a block. I love it.
Well, and I think, too, that those props sometimes can help you really perfect an alignment.
Yes.
Or, you know, make sure that you're not hurting yourself as you're progressing through, you know, deepening the practice.
100%. You know, for me, it's not a flexibility issue, but I can't maintain alignment properly and hold myself in as I should, so I use a block. Or I essentially might hurt myself if I repeat that pose over and over again. That's exactly right.
And straps are another prop.
Straps. I love straps. So we use straps often. We use a lot of blankets. In certain classes, we use bolsters for relaxation. But mainly when I would go into a yoga class, I would suggest get two blocks, a strap, and probably a blanket.
We are talking with Megan McCreary. She's a Los Angeles-based yoga teacher and the author of Pick Your Yoga Practice, Exploring and Understanding Different Types of Yoga. You can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mehler Show, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Megan, the history of yoga is very long and very deep, but can you give us a very short summary of its roots?
Well, its roots are way, 5,000 years ago, they say, but nobody really knows. Yoga in the Indus Valley civilization, sort of where yoga, Hinduism, all of these spiritualities sort of arose out of this one population. Major texts, we have the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, which is the first sort of organization of yoga, and that was around about 2,500 years ago. Then we moved into Tantra and Hatha Yoga, but here in the States, it's really been interesting because yoga was first really just brought in ways of ideas and meditations and sort of esoteric concepts. And then in the 60s and 70s, a lot of gurus arrived and were setting up ashrams and giving loud public speeches, and all of America's youth was becoming interested in this sort of Indian spirituality. Mm-hmm. Then in the 80s, as we all know, aerobics became very popular, and yoga almost, sort of faded really into the background, so it had to reinvent itself. And then in the early 90s, we saw celebrities start doing yoga, but yoga was sort of now becoming this mindful way to really shape and sculpt the body, and that's when you saw power yoga become big. That's when you saw yoga in the gyms, Bikram yoga, that really hot mm-hmm. yoga. And then from there, it just continued to grow. And I mean, now Nike sponsors yoga teachers. It's really incredible.
And how many people are estimated to be practicing yoga in the U.S.?
Oh, millions. I would need to look back through my proposal, but it's the Yoga Journal puts out a study every other year, and it grows rapidly. Do you know?
I can't remember. It was in your book. I remember,
I know,
but it is millions.
I'd have to look. There was so much research. I believe it was very high. 15.6 million, I believe, is what's sticking in my head.
That does sound about right, because I remember doing the math and thinking it's at least 5% of the population.
Yes. That sounds about right.
We are talking with Megan McCreary. She is the author of Pick Your Yoga Practice, Exploring and Understanding Different Types of Yoga. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in this week for Larry Mehler on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope you'll stay tuned, because coming up at 11:45, Rick Cini of FairCompare.com has great advice for buying airline tickets at the right time to avoid paying too much. That's coming up at 11:45 today. But right now we are talking with Megan McCreary. She is the author of Pick Your Yoga Practice, Exploring and Understanding Different Types of Yoga. And Megan, we have several people who'd like to join in. So let's go to the phones and Cynthia in Menominee. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm calling in because I've been a yogi for about 8 years now, and it got started because of my fibromyalgia.
Oh.
Well, it is one of the best practices to help with the fibro, and I use the breathing daily, just doing my daily chores, working around my horses, breathing and stretching, and it works great in the dentist chair.
Oh. That's a great practical application, Cynthia. Tell us a little more about how it's helped with your chronic pain.
Well, when I'm having a flare-up, my muscles get very stiff. And so I just start breathing and stretching, countering those muscles. And I've worked with the same yoga instructor that whole time, and she is able to tell when I walk into the room, because I do a group, when I walk in, she can see what's hurting me and what's stiff.
Wow.
And sometimes I can't go through all of the poses, but then I've been doing this long enough that I know how to adapt them.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Cynthia. And Megan, I'm guessing that you're happy to hear that, but not entirely surprised by Cynthia's experience.
No, that's great. Fibromyalgia, there are many, many therapeutic applications. And I love what she said. Really, part of the deal with yoga is just being in the room and being present and breathing. You can get so many benefits. You don't have to do all the poses and everything. And I think that's so cute about the breathing and the dentist chair. I find myself deep breathing all the time. It really is a way of calming the nervous system down and narrowing the mind so you can just be present. And when you have the breath, you can really get through just about anything.
Mm-hmm. And Cynthia used the term yogi. She said, I've been a yogi for several years. I think that's a word that for a lot of people conjures up this image of this, you know, ascetic sitting on the top of a mountain, you know, not having talked to anyone in 20 years kind of thing. But really, anyone who practices yoga is a yogi.
Yeah, one of my philosophy teachers would say, you know, when yoga is no longer just something you do, but it becomes a part of your life, then you're a yogi.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think it's partly not feeling like if you're not perfect at every pose, well, I can't be a yogi, because if I was, I would pop into all those, you know, those balance poses without breaking a sweat.
No, that's just one of the big injustices I think has happened as yoga has become so popular, because we've seen so many images now, and there are these beautiful people, mostly women, in these elaborate poses, and that's sort of missing the boat a little bit. So I tell my students, a yoga, like, just because someone can do one of those amazing poses, how do you know they're a nice person? How do you know they're considerate? How do you know they're mindful with the way they speak? How do you know they're present, or they're even breathing in that pose that you're seeing? It really has very little to do with being able to fold yourself in a pretzel.
Right. And Cynthia mentioned that especially when she's dealing with bouts of her chronic pain, that her flexibility really declines. We had a Facebook comment from Leslie who said, heated vinyasa is super awesome for the flexibly challenged folks like me.
Yes. That's another big, I feel like, myth that happens. People that feel like they're really inflexible can't go to yoga, when actually it's a great thing to go do. When you're inflexible, get yourself in yoga.
Right.
We weren't strong before we started, you know, doing our push-ups or lifting weights. So the inflexible are very, very welcome and benefit greatly from the yoga. And the vinyasa, what he's talking about, it warms the body up. It's repetitive motion, so you get really warm from the inside, which helps with the opening of the muscles.
Sarah and DePier is up next. Let's go there. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I just have a comment. I am celebrating my one-year anniversary of being a yogi on March 22nd. My girlfriend took me kicking and screaming to my first hot yoga class. And ever since then, I've been practicing about three to four times a week. And I just have to say that it completely centers me. I am a happier person. I am sick less. And just overall, I just try to bring as many people to my class. And what you were saying about, your teacher, of just really being able to motivate you and tell you how to modify and just make you feel comfortable in the class. I just really encourage people to try different studios, and you will know which studio that you will want to practice at, because you will want to go and you will be addicted.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks for that. And how nice that it was timing for Sarah's first anniversary.
Oh, I love that. I love what she said. She keep going, and even in the studios, try different teachers. You'll know. It's an interesting thing. You'll know when you're in the right place, and it'll feel good. Because some people, I'm a very nurturing teacher, and some people need that, and some people don't. Some people want someone who talks less, or somebody. It's really a very personal experience and preference.
So, Megan, in the book, Pick Your Yoga Practice, Exploring and Understanding Different Types of Yoga, you outline 7 different styles of yoga in depth, and then you also give short outlines of 10 other styles. That's a lot of different styles.
I know. There's many, many more. It became stressful just trying to pick which ones go where and which ones make it in the main section and which ones don't. There are a lot of styles. There are a lot of also yoga hybrid now. So yoga and spin, yoga and boxing, yoga and Pilates, hip-hop yoga. You know, yoga is such a great way of giving the body an overall workout. And the breath, as we've been discussing, is so beneficial that they're finding that yoga is a great complement to just about everything. Golfers now, surfers, everybody's discovered. I know a teacher who teaches the UCLA baseball team yoga a couple times a week. It's really becoming very recognized.
Hmm. And you do say that even with all those many different styles of yoga, that they have more in common than they differ from each other. So you mentioned breathing. What are some of the other core commonalities that almost all of those yoga styles share?
The breath, the presence, the awareness, the mindfulness. A lot of the same postures, although they'll probably have different alignments or different ways of cueing. But really, yoga is a practice that brings you closer to yourself. So you get to be with yourself for an hour and a half, and engage yourself. But you can sort of step away from your outside life and find out what's happening physically, emotionally, mentally. So they all share that in common. And really, yoga is yoga is yoga, and then until it isn't, you know. So I encourage anybody to get into any style of yoga because you're going to gain something out of it. And finding the one that suits you, you're going to gain the most out of.
And we'll talk more about how to find one that suits you, but let's go back to the phones. And Mike in Minneapolis is up next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually a cheesehead during the week time and live there at night, so
okay.
I appreciate it.
We like our Minnesota listeners as well, so you were fine
you
on
go.
Either way.
I'm a marathoner and want to become a yogi, but I drive a lot, and I'm wondering if there's any kind of yoga practices that I can do in the car to complement my running that I do when I'm not driving.
All right. Good question, Mike. Megan, what would you recommend?
Well, there's not a whole lot of yoga, which is just doing with your legs in the car, mainly for safety reasons. But there's a lot of stretching and whatnot you can do with your shoulders and opening the chest. In the car, in general, I recommend I use a lot of pillows and pads to sit upright. I really recommend. There's, for neck and shoulders and actually back stuff, there's these great books called the McKinsey books. And they have these different pads and props you use basically in the car. So, which I really love. It helps you align up in the car. Then there's neck stretches, some wrist stretch. If you were to do a simple Google search of car yoga, you would find probably 3 or 4 great exercises or stretches to do while you're sitting in traffic or something like that. But more so, maybe right when I got out of the car, I would do something like sit in a chair against the car and cross one ankle over one knee to stretch that driving hip back out. Or bend the knees and forward fold. I think we don't realize that when we've been in the car, we've been in one position for a while and our fascia gets sticky and tight. So when we get out of the car, do a few side bends, do a few arm circles, some forward folds, a simple hip opener, like sitting against the car.
And I think, too, once you go to a few yoga classes, Mike, and learn some of those breathing techniques, that's certainly something
yes.
that you could be doing in the car.
Yes, and I often forget that because it becomes so automatic for me. I notice in traffic things, my breath just starts kicking in, which is so great. It becomes just a part of what you do. It's what you rely on. Tools.
We are talking with Megan McCrary. She is the author of Pick Your Yoga Practice. Her last name is McCrary, in case you're looking for her. And on our Facebook page, there's a link directly to her website, which is meganmccrary.com. And Megan, because that's spelled differently for different people, is Meagan. Let's go now to Dwight in Duluth. Hi, Dwight.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I'm wondering... you know, like the book says, there's so many different practices of it. I'm 60 years old. I love to play golf, and I'm thinking for flexibility and balance that this could be, you know, a real good addition on a year-round basis. Because a lot of the year I can't golf. So we're in the winter up here. And so is there a different practice that I should look for specifically, and how do you figure out who does that?
Well, this is kind of perfect, I think, because we were going to go through kind of some of the steps of how to choose. So here's Dwight, who's 60-ish and a golfer, but never has done yoga. What are the first things, Megan, that you would recommend that he consider?
Well, I would consider physicality is always the first thing. How vigorous and what are your desires? So if you're looking, you know, let's say you were looking to also lose weight and you were physically active, so you wanted something more strenuous, you could go to a more a vigorous, active class, which will also end up giving you flexibility, especially through the torso, which I know golfers need for the twisting and the power through the torso. So, but if you were looking for something that was really addressing very specifically, you know, stretches and where golfers might be tighter, you'd want to go to a more individualized approach. I always think Iyengar yoga is a really great place to start because it's the most, you're going to get the greatest foundation.
Why don't you spell Iyengar for people?
Okay, yes, this may get a little confusing. It's Iyengar.
Great.
And so that's a size that uses a lot of props, that slows down and really gets into each pose so you learn the alignment. Really great for therapeutic reasons. They have many, and then Iyengar Center, there's many different classes geared for different things. I believe Iyengar even has yoga for golfers.
Hmm.
And there's another way. You could always Google yoga for golfers. You'll probably find a few teachers in your area. It's a pretty big thing these days. Vinny yoga is not quite as accessible, but you may be able to find a Vinny, Vinyoga. Yes. That's a very, very, very individualized approach. So you'd work one-on-one with a teacher to probably develop your own routine for at home. Other than that, oh, and how you find them, I believe you mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can simply, in the back of my book and in many places, the internet obviously is a great resource. And if you find a style you like, let's say Iyengar yoga, you can go to the main Iyengar yoga page. And from there, you'll find a teacher directory. And you can put in your city and state, and they'll pop up the teachers in your area. And almost every style has that.
And you also mention in the book that one thing to keep in mind is if you have any limitations, I mean, we talked about not being flexible isn't a reason not to go to yoga, but maybe a past injury or something that you might want to keep that in mind or at least mention it when you, you know, decide to try out a different practice.
100%. I'm always a little shocked by people who mention something like after class or they think they're, because you know, there's a lot of misconceptions around yoga. So when they just throw themselves into a class, you really don't want to do that, especially if you have any range of motion limitations or past injuries. You really want to go to a style that's going to build methodically an alignment-based. And always tell the teacher. Always, always just mention to the teacher. The teacher wants to know. Don't be embarrassed. Because there are just ways of moving and special things that the teacher can tell you little tiny tips that are just going to help protect your body throughout the entire practice.
And I wanted to mention that Carl, our on-air producer, just let me know that one of our very helpful listeners called to let Dwight know that there is a place in Duluth called Yoga North that does yoga for golfers.
Oh, fantastic!
We have very helpful and knowledgeable listeners, and they're always happy to help each other out. So one of the things that you also say, Megan, is, you know, I think for some people, yoga has this kind of new agey image to it. And there are some classes and some styles that are much more using things like chanting and a more spiritual level. But there are also kind of more straightforward mind body workouts. If someone is looking for that kind of experience that does incorporate chants and maybe other kind of more ritual based yoga, what kind of styles might be good for them?
Well, I really, so one of the most outwardly spiritual practices would be like Kundalini yoga. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot. They're actually the most unique. They do a lot. Everybody wears white, which you don't have to. They wear white for energetic reasons. There's a lot of chanting, a lot of different breathing techniques. Meditation's always incorporated. It's an experience. Every exercise you do creates a lot of movement of energy within your body. And then you sit and you just pay attention to the energy in your body. And it brings up a lot of emotions. It's quite the experience. If you're not looking for something, that out there, integral yoga and Sivananda yoga are two very, very traditional lineages that really incorporate meditation, breathing, yoga relaxation, chanting, as well as the asana practice. So it's not just a physical experience.
And the asanas are the different poses that you go
through. Yes. Sorry. Thank you so much for that.
No problem. And let's go back to the phones, actually. Herb in Green Bay would like to join in. Hi, Herb.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd just like to make a comment. But before I do, just a little background. I do martial arts. I've done martial arts since the 70s. And I was introduced to the yoga years ago, but didn't really follow up on it, just took a class with it. And then about 3 months ago, I still do martial arts. I actually have a school, and we just got a yoga teacher down here about 3 months ago. And it's just been this phenomenal change. My body's a little bit older. I've always had arthritis. And so training and injuries go hand in hand. And now that I do this yoga, I wake up the next morning, I'm all excited, I'm happy, my body's happier. It's just an unbelievable feeling when I do the yoga. And it's actually, just like you're talking about, it's really a mental thing as much as a physical thing. Mm-hmm. So when I feel better, I get up and I'm going, yay, welcome world. So I'm very happy and excited with this yoga we're doing.
That's great. Yeah, and it sounds like it goes along well with the martial arts, which is also a physical and mental practice.
It really goes hand in hand. It really does. A lot of people, like the young lady was saying, that it does have different connotations. But the training is just, it's unbelievable. It really adds so much to the response with the centering and being focused and relaxing. I mean, martial artists don't get a chance to relax very often, so it's a great enjoyment to be able to relax and be stretching at the same time.
Thank you so much for that, Herb. Megan, I assume you think that's a pretty good combination Herb's got going.
Yeah, I think that's great. Herb, do you happen to know what type of yoga that teacher was trained in?
You know, she says she does 3 or 4 different types of yoga.
Yeah, that's common.
And I couldn't follow them. Yeah, and she said it's pretty common that a lot of people do different ones. And so.
Very, very common. That's great. I think that's amazing. And people really underestimate the stretching and how important it is because, if I can leave everybody with one thing, it would be to watch this on YouTube or wherever you can find it. It's called the Fuzz Speech, F-U-Z-Z. And it's about fascia, which is like layers of muscle and tendons and things. And people really underestimate how important it is to be able to move our body and to move our spine. And once the body starts to get stiff and the spine starts to get stiff and on lockdown, it affects everything from our mental abilities to our emotional abilities. When you're stiff and your muscles aren't breathing and your organs aren't getting fresh blood, you don't feel like getting up in the morning. Mm-hmm. But if you yawn in the morning and you take some good morning stretches and you feel 10 times better when you put your feet on the floor.
Thank you so much for that, Herb. Let's go to Mary in Washburn next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I just wanted to add a little different perspective. As somebody who currently, in the last about 10 years, am physically not able to do much of any, yoga maneuvers. I never was a major practitioner. I used to do the series of movements, very common, called the Salute to the Sun with my daughters. And what I wanted to say is that now, just to encourage other people who, like myself, are perhaps restricted physically, maybe paralyzed in wheelchairs, or can move around but not begin to do a lot of what's called for in yoga, is what I do is I'm able to stand, and I simply approximate. I very deeply imagine doing the whole series of salute mm-hmm. movements, and the couple of those movements that you do when you're standing, I approximate them, very tiny approximation, but nevertheless do what I can of it, and then simply go ahead with my imagination and deeply feel what it felt like to do that. Take the same amount of time in my thinking that it would take to do it. And I do concentrate now on breathing, which I never did when I was doing the movements. I found that distracting. So now I concentrate more on the breathing. And I find the whole exercise just enormously satisfying. And so I just want to encourage other people to either old practitioners who have given up to not do that, to try to approximate and to imagine. And people that have never done yoga, there's some beautifully illustrated books that you can use, mm-hmm. and just sit there and imagine with them.
Wow. Well, Megan, I can't imagine a better way to finish our conversation than Mary's testimonial. And I think a couple of things that really stood out, thank you so much for sharing that, Mary, is that Mary has adapted it for mm-hmm. what she is physically able to do, and that, as we have been saying all along, that is more than okay. That's really what your goal should be. But also that she has found more deep understanding of things like the breathing because she has adapted it.
Well, and that's people here in the West think yoga, think the physical practice on the mat, when actually yoga is a very large tradition with many practices, one of which is a visualization. It's a very large practice in yoga. So even the conceptualization, the visualization she was doing is a yoga practice in itself. And on that note, I just wanted to share, there's a teacher who's paralyzed who has done unprecedented things with yoga in the community. His name is Matthew Sanford. It's incredible. I encourage anybody to look up his story.
Wow. Well, that's a whole nother level. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Mary, for joining in. And Megan McCrary, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. This has been a very lovely experience. Your listeners are quite amazing.
They really are, aren't they? Maybe you should come out to Wisconsin sometime and meet them in person.
It sounds lovely.
Maybe when it's a little warmer.
Okay, I'll stay in L.A. for now.
Exactly. Well, Megan McCrary is the author of Pick Your Yoga Practice, Exploring and Understanding Different Types of Yoga. And we do have a link to Megan's website and to the book on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. Well, Megan McCrary gave us great information on how to pick a yoga practice that works for us. Coming up next, Rick Sini of faircompare.com has great advice for picking an airline ticket at the right time to avoid paying too much. I hope you'll stay tuned. We'll be right back with Rick Sini.